Hi there, friends of more, friends of the management of reality. This is our English language podcast, and today we are going to be talking about the latest proposal, Netanyahu's proposal to advance in Gaza and destroy Hamas and so forth. We're going to explain exactly what that is about because people are getting different ideas about it. Then we're going to talk about the ongoing accusation against Israel that it's supposedly committing genocide in Gaza. We will talk about the accusation of the alleged starvation in Gaza. And we will also discuss the merits of the proposed new policy in Gaza, whether it really makes sense to just conquer the city of Gaza, which is what is being proposed, and not the whole Gaza Strip. You know, what are the pros and cons about that? And then I'll spend a little time discussing what is the explanation for why the information about Israel is so biased. Like, where does that come from, right? Because it's quite remarkable. So that's what we're going to be looking at. Okay, let's get started. First of all, what is Netanyahu saying that he's going to do now? So the announcement is that Israel will conquer not the Gaza Strip, because the phrase that people are hearing is that, oh, that Israel's going to conquer Gaza, right? That's actually not what is being proposed. What is being proposed is that they'll conquer the city of Gaza. So now this may be confusing because the name of Gaza is for the entire strip, but it's also the name of the capital. So it's a little bit like Mexico, right? What's the name of the capital of Mexico? Mexico. People get confused. What are you talking about, the country or the city? And there's also one of our component states is also the state of Mexico. So that, of course, makes it easier. Anyway, this happens here too, right? People say conquer Gaza. And you can easily be confused. The proposal is to conquer the city of Gaza, only the city. And before they try and conquer Gaza, what they're going to do is they're going to evacuate the civilian population of Gaza to the south of the Gaza Strip. And they're going to set up hospitals first and this and that and the infrastructure to, you know, take care of people and get them humanitarian aid and all of this stuff. So first they need to build all of that stuff in the south of Gaza. This is something that Israel is going to do. They're going to get all of that prepared to receive the civilian population of Gaza in there and give them services and humanitarian aid and so forth. And then they're going to go in to fight, you know, house to house, street by street, and get control over the city of Gaza. This is the proposal. So am I leaving something out? Okay, no. All right. So that's just to clear up, you know, what is actually being proposed versus what a lot of people are imagining was proposed. Now, what about the accusation of genocide? Because, of course, this is supposed to be the latest Israeli blow in their alleged ongoing genocide of the Arab population in Gaza. And, of course, just the fact that the way that the Israelis want to do this is to first spend a couple of weeks or however long it's going to take to build all that emergency infrastructure in southern Gaza to receive all of the people of Gaza before they go and fight for Gaza, right? The fact that they're going to do all that is obviously in stark and violent contradiction with the claim that they're conducting a genocide, right? In fact, I think that it is perfectly safe to say that no army in the history of the planet has ever made greater efforts to assist the population of its enemy. And this is not just any enemy. This is an enemy that does believe in genocide, that announces publicly. Hamas's constitution says that they that they intend to kill all of the Jews. That's what they say in their charter, in their founding charter, right? They're not shy about it. They're quite explicit. And they carried out the worst attack against Jewish civilians, in fact, a genocidal attack, on October 7th, 2023, right? So this is the enemy. And yet, even though this is the worst possible kind of enemy, which has engaged in the worst possible kinds of attacks, Israel is doing what no country in the history of the planet has ever done for the enemy population. It is making itself responsible for the enemy population. That's not something that anybody does, okay? And this is what they're calling genocide. So obviously, if they're calling this genocide, then you know where you are, or rather when you are. You are living in the year 1984. This is the year, right, in Orwell's novel, which for him was in the future, where every important political word will be made to mean its opposite. Okay? So the slogan of the uniparty that existed in this totalitarian state that Orwell imagined, right? They had a slogan, the party did, and people had to repeat it all the time, and the slogan went like this: war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. Of course, these are not the only important political words whose meanings have to be inverted in a totalitarian system. It's just like, it's a short list to sort of give you the spirit of what you're supposed to be doing to your mind, right? So you're supposed to be processing every important political word with the exact opposite meaning. So war is peace. Well, obviously, right? We live in a world where war is peace, because the greatest power in the world, the people running the United States, the U.S. bosses, invented a diplomatic process to bring genocidal terrorists descended from the German Nazi Final Solution, and I'll share my screen right now to share with you guys where we have this documented. So if you go to our Substack and you go to the you don't need to go to the archive, right up here you'll see our most popular article is this one. It's about the responsibility of the Arab-Palestinian movement in the German Nazi Final Solution. I'll make it really short. The founding father of the Arab-Palestinian movement, this guy right here, Haj Amin al-Husseini, that guy was a top leader of the German Nazi Final Solution, okay? He was running, he was administering the death camps with Adolf Eichmann, the recognized director of the death camp system, and he was recruiting just giant multitudes of Bosnian Muslims and Albanian Muslims to divisions of Heinrich Himmler's SS. He was running the Holocaust. Okay, this is the founding father of the Arab-Palestinian movement, and he is the creator of al-Fatah. Okay, he is the creator of Yasser Arafat and Mahmoud Abbas and their cronies. Right, so that's where what we now call the Palestinian Authority comes from. The Palestinian Authority is Arafat. It's the PLO. It's PLO Fatah. And Fatah, the organization that really runs it, was created by this character, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the guy who killed all the European Jews. All right? So the U.S. bosses created a diplomatic process to bring these people into the Jewish state, to bring PLO Fatah, Yasser Arafat and his buddies, who are mentees of Haj Amin al-Husseini, right? He's the one who created them as a group, al-Fatah. They brought these guys into the state of Israel, all right? This is the enemy. This is what Israel is fighting. And Hamas is no better. Hamas is the same kind of thing. Hamas is, they put it in their charter that they're going to exterminate all of the Jews, right? So this is what we got. We got a diplomatic process created by the U.S. bosses, that was designed to bring the Jew killers into the Jewish state, right? The people whose mission it is to destroy the Jewish people in genocide into the Jewish state. And what did they call it? This is the point I was driving to. They called it the peace process. So a process designed to produce an anti-Jewish genocide was called a peace process. Therefore, war is peace. War is peace. You are living in Orwell's world. What this means is that the people running the world have a totalitarian ideology already. You may not be living in a completely totalitarian state yet, but the fact that the system is speaking with Orwellian inversions means that that you are already being governed by the totalitarians, and they're teaching you to speak in this way so that you cannot defend yourself politically. That's what's going on. We have an article explaining precisely that issue. So let me put that up as well for people to see. Because you might find this useful. So if you go into our archive and you type Orwell, the Orwellian signal will pop up. And that's the article where we explain the importance of the Orwellian signal. And why, when you see that the system, the political system, the institutional system is speaking in Orwellian signals, it means that the power elite is already the enemy and they're about to make you a slave. They're working to make you a slave. They're working to transition us from this simulated democracy into a more frank totalitarianism where all of the rights you still enjoy will be completely vaporized. Okay. So this is where we explain how to read the system, how to pay attention to the way they're speaking so that you know who's running things, okay? I think you'll find it useful. All right. So, of course, within this system of inverted meanings, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, of course, the victims become the oppressors. Right? And this is actually the strategy of woke identity politics and social justice warrioring, right? I think the acronym was DARVO? And the second part of DARVO is reverse victim and oppressor or something like that. Or that's the last part. Reverse victim and oppressor, something like that. In other words, it's part of the understood strategy of woke political maneuvering, if you will, right? That you reverse victim and oppressor. In other words, you tell people that the victim is the oppressor and you tell them that the oppressor is the victim, which is exactly what is going on in Gaza. Right? This is precisely what's going on. So yeah, you have an organization that is represented as tiny little David fighting big bad Goliath, right? So Gaza is supposed to be the tiny little David. Israel is supposed to be the big bad Goliath. But in reality, behind Hamas is a gigantic structure. And they're getting help not only from the Muslim world, they're getting help from all the Western world, and in particular from the U.S. bosses, right? We've done a lot of work on the website to document this. So just go into the website and look for something, because that claim is all over the place, right? That the U.S. bosses are in fact the main promoters of world jihad. We make this claim all over the place, almost in every article we publish, and we have reams and reams of documentation to support that claim. Right. So in reality, it's not tiny little Hamas battling big bad Israel. In fact, it's the U.S. bosses, the best friends of Qatar, who is the daddy of Hamas. Right. Those are the guys screwing up Israel, the U.S. bosses. Right. So Israel is still David. They've always been. The Jews have always been David. And Goliath, the true Goliath, the U.S. bosses, the most powerful people on the entire planet. Those are the people trying to destroy Israel. They're the ones who created the so-called peace process, which is a war process. It's a genocide process against the Jews, right? They created that to bring the Jew killers into the Jewish state. And they are also the ones who are tightly allied with Qatar, sugar daddy for Hamas and creator of the Gazan terrorist state, right? So, and that's just one example, okay? Just go into the website and you'll see the entire pro-jihadi structure of the U.S. bosses, which has been unfolding over the over several decades, is documented with exquisite care in many, many articles. So this is the real structure. The real structure is Israel is still David. And in fact, but not only that, the bad guys are clearly Hamas, because Hamas are the ones who have the genocidal ideology. They are the ones that live to murder another people, right? So everything is upside down. The good guys become the bad guys. The victims become the oppressors. War, you know, war becomes peace. Freedom becomes slavery. This is this. Everything is inverted. You're living in an Orwellian world, and the conclusion from this kind of consciousness, the conclusion, if you will, for action, is that we need to hurry up to defend the West, because there isn't that much time left. This has been this has been building for a while, and now it's accelerating greatly. I made this prediction a while ago, so if you need a little more another reason to have a little faith in my model, I'll remind our viewers that I'll show you here. This was published in, this is our hub. This is our hub website. If you go to books over here, you'll see the title of my book, which was published in, well, the title of the series, which was published in 2013, I started publishing it, is The Collapse of the West, The Next Holocaust and Its Consequences. Because I was sure that they were going to try and kill all of the Jews again. And I was also sure that this would be accompanied by a collapse of the entire West. And what are we living through right now? There is an ongoing genocide of the Jews. It began on October 7th, 2023. It's still ongoing. And it's just a question of whether of whether we will work with Israel to stop it, right? But they started already. The genocide started. The opening shot was October 7th. And at the same time that that's going on, the West is clearly collapsing. Family structure is collapsing. Reproduction is collapsing. Civil rights are collapsing. Freedom of speech is collapsing. We are all in the West on the brink of civil war, which is where identity politics brought us, right? And so everything is just falling apart at the same time that there's an ongoing effort to exterminate the Israeli Jews, okay? That's exactly what I predicted would happen. And we're living through it right now. So I think these warnings should be taken seriously. We have very little time in which to still to react. We can do it. The West doesn't have to crumble. These guys don't have to win. We have the communication tools to talk to everyone in the West now and help enlighten them. But we have to do it. We actually have to do the effort. All right, so the accusation of genocide. Now let me talk a little bit about the accusation of starvation in Gaza, because that's another Orwellian inversion, right? So no army in the history of this planet has ever made greater efforts to make humanitarian aid reach the civilian population of the enemy. There's just no case in history where anything like this has happened. I mean, the state of Israel has bent over backwards to let truckloads, you know, tons and tons and tons of humanitarian aid into Gaza, which is a way of helping Hamas, okay? Because Hamas ends up controlling the humanitarian aid and it makes them stronger. But no, never in history has there been this amazing phenomenon of a country that is under attack feeding the population of the enemy. This has never happened before. So, and again, it's the Orwellian inversion, because in these circumstances, what the media starts telling everybody in the West is that Israel is supposedly starving people in Gaza to death, right? And the way they do it, so we've covered this already, but I'm going to go over this ground one more time, very, very fast, because it's very important, because we call ourselves the management of reality, and we need to help people distinguish reality from the lies. So this is the photograph that the New York Times used to convince the world that there's supposedly that people in Gaza are supposedly starving, okay? And I mean, of course, you have to be sorry. You have to feel sorry for that kid, of course. But that doesn't mean he's starving. David Collier, an independent journalist, got the medical records for this kid, and it turned out that he has a medical condition that it interferes with the growth of his muscles. So yes, he's abnormally thin, that's for sure. But it's not because he's starving. And the hypothesis that you're being lied to should have been the first hypothesis for the people at the New York Times, right? They're supposed to be, seasoned journalists, right? This is supposed to be the best, the most prestigious, the trend-setting newspaper of record is what they call themselves. They're the newspaper of record, right? So supposedly, I mean, if you're living in a world with a real free press, with institutions that are really trying to establish what's going on, right? This photograph would have never passed the smell test, because it is obvious that the mother is not suffering from malnutrition. And so you would have to think that the mother is keeping food from her child. How is this happening? How is the mother well fed and the child is starving? That's obviously ridiculous. So there should have been a lot of suspicion about this photograph from the beginning, because it looks funny, right? But no, they went ahead and they published it, and they claimed that this was evidence for starvation. And the thing that we explained in the previous podcast is that, look, if you really have images of people starving, you would use those. You wouldn't create a hoax. You wouldn't grab a photo of a child who has a genetic condition that interferes with the growth of his muscles, right? Because that's a lie. He's not malnourished. He has a medical problem, sure, but it's not malnutrition, right? So if you really had photographs of people starving, you would use those. Of course, you wouldn't run the risk of being exposed by David Collier, as happened. The New York Times had to apologize and retract itself partially. But they kept saying that even though the kid had a genetic condition, that he was also malnourished. And the claim that he's also malnourished, that claim is coming from the Gaza Health Ministry. And the Gaza Health Ministry is Hamas. So what the New York Times is doing is it's repeating whatever Hamas says as if it were true. They're repeating what genocidal terrorists in Gaza say to them as if it were true. This is anti-Semitism. There's no reason to believe a word that the Hamas genocidal terrorists in Gaza say. But this is what all the media does. So let me point out, here's an article by CNN. And this is what they're saying right now in reply to the proposal, to the policy announcement, forgive me, that Israel will conquer the city of Gaza, right? So in reaction to that, I'm looking at the wrong, that's Spanish. I had it in English here. Let me see if I can find it. Well, I'll just translate it. We will give you the link to the article in English, but I'll just translate what they're saying, so that I don't waste time looking for it. Okay, so here it is. So they say that the deaths by hunger are increasing in the enclave in Gaza, especially between especially among children with severe malnutrition, said Raja Singham. This is how you know that people are lying, right? Deaths by starvation are augmenting, especially among people with severe malnutrition. Yeah, I would think, right, that the people dying from starvation would be people with severe malnutrition. You know, the people who usually die of starvation are the people with severe malnutrition. They're imbeciles, right? They're lying, so they speak too much. They talk for too long, right? And then they say this nonsense. And look what he says. He says, from October 2023, 98 children have died from severe malnutrition, and 37 just since last July 1st. He informed the Security Council of the UN, citing the health authorities in Gaza. And that's the key phrase, citing the health authorities in Gaza. So what CNN is saying is that 98 children have died. And the people that are giving them this information are the Hamas terrorists in Gaza. CNN does not care. This is like, you know, imagine that you had a serial killer in your city and the cops are trying to catch the serial killer. And the news is reporting on this whole drama by telling you what the situation is, and their report of the situation is coming from the serial killer. Okay, so the local city in the news is telling you, oh, and this is going on, and this is going on, and the police are doing this, and this is happening, and all of that stuff is being fed to them by the serial killer. Meanwhile, the police makes different kinds of claims, of course, and those are not important. And the entire slant of the news reporting is that the police are reacting disproportionately to the serial killer. You know, they're being too mean to the serial killer. This is what's going on. The news media is reporting on events in Gaza according to the description of the Hamas genocidal terrorists. The people in charge are totalitarians. They're trying to kill the Jews. They control the news. That's why the news is upside down. That's why when the state of Israel makes the biggest efforts possible, not only to spare death for the civilian population, but to feed it, they're accused of starving them and of conducting a genocide. That's because the people who want to kill Jews are in control of the media. And we have this documented on our site. You can read about this too. So if you come to the site and you go into the archive and you type Nazis, you will find this article, which is where we explain that when the CIA was created, the CIA is the clandestine service that spends US citizen money in secret. Okay, they have the greatest concentration of money in history at their disposal, because the budget of the CIA is a state secret. So we don't really know. I mean, for all practical purposes, it's infinite. And they make use of the US Treasury, which is the greatest concentration of money in history. So with that power, what are they going to do? Well, of course, they're going to corrupt all of the institutions. Obviously, that's what Nazis do, right? So if you create your clandestine service by recruiting tens of thousands of Nazis, that's basically what the CIA was when it was created. It's just German Nazis and Nazi collaborators from Eastern Europe that had been the entire infrastructure of Adolf Hitler's intelligence network in Eastern Europe, in Fremde Heer Ost, his foreign armies East. That whole thing was absorbed to create the CIA after the war. Reinhard Gehling, the guy who had been running it, told the Americans, he said, look, I can build this for you. If you want, I can just reconstitute it. And they did. So if those people can spend in secret a practically infinite amount of money, well, they're going to use it to corrupt the institutions. And of course, the first institutions they're going to want to corrupt are the institutions of the media. And we have another article where we explain one of the policies that they employed to do that. Not the only one, but a very important one. You type in there Simpson. Actually, if you type Simpson, you get both articles because Christopher Simpson's investigations are the ones that blew this up. And this article documents how the CIA created the entire academic institutional space of communication research, which is these departments of communication that train all of the people who do content work in the mainstream media. Okay, these people go to university to departments of communication where they are taught how to be good journalists, right? And then they go work for CNN, they go work for the New York Times or for whomever. Everybody gets trained in these departments of communication. And these departments of communication were created by the CIA. And the professors who chair all of these important, institutes and departments of communication, all of the professors teaching these classes to these budding journalists, those guys in World War II were running the psychological warfare efforts of the U.S. government. Okay. Now, what is psychological warfare? Well, psychological warfare is how do you fool millions of people into thinking that something is true when it isn't by using mass media? That's psychological warfare. So the people who knew how to do that, the people who knew how to bamboozle entire countries with the use of the media, those are the people who became the academic professors in the departments of communication, post-war departments of communication, that were created in the blink of an eye, right, by the CIA. That's who teaches, the psychological warfare experts. Okay, so that's what you got. This is what the modern media is. It's the Nazis taking over the media, turning it into a psychological warfare weapon for promoting their goals. And their goals are, they're Nazis. So what are they going to do? Well, of course, they're going to teach you through the media and through academia, because they also took over academia. They're going to teach you that the Jews are supposedly the bad guys. That's what they did in the prelude to World War II. That's how they got the Jews killed in World War II. Okay, there was a huge propaganda before World War II about how bad the Jews supposedly were, and this was called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, and we have an article about that too, so that you can see how history repeats itself. So if you type in Prague Cemetery or protocols or anything like that, you'll find this article. And it explains how the propaganda worked. What was the propaganda that produced the Holocaust, right? And it was a different kind of story. People were not saying that the Jews were committing genocide. People were saying that the Jews were supposedly taking over all of the institutions in secret. You know, what the CIA in fact does, what the Nazis do, they said the Jews were doing, you see. Because it's Orwellian, you see. Everything is upside down. So when the Nazis are out corrupting all of the institutions and destroying our democracy, what they use those institutions to make us believe, right, through their management of reality, is that it's the Jews doing what they're doing, what the Nazis are doing, you see. The Jews are the Nazis, you see. Everything is put upside down. Everything becomes its Orwellian inversion. There are just so many examples. Now they've been making people say that a man is a woman, that a woman is a man. That's what the whole trans movement is about. Once people start doing this, once people start insisting as though it's some kind of revelation that the meaning of an important word is actually the opposite, once people start doing this to their minds, they are easy prey for the people who want to turn them into slaves. because they can no longer think. They have no contact with reality. And in order to defend yourself and to defend your rights and your liberties, to defend your family, your civilization, you first of all have to make contact with reality. You can't let somebody else manage reality for you. If you do that, if you allow that, well, then they will be your masters and you will be their slave. Okay. So this is why we call this the management of reality, because we are interested in human liberty. And the only way to produce human liberty is for people to emancipate themselves to the description of reality that they have been receiving. If somebody is managing reality for you, you are their slave. If you accept the model of the world that is coming through via the media, if you simply accept it, if you don't investigate it, if you don't question it, you are a slave because you don't have contact with reality. You don't. You can't be everywhere, right? Everything comes through the media. So if you just accept that, you are the slave of that representation. If somebody else controls that representation, they control you. All right. What was the other topic I needed to talk about? That was whether the policy that Netanyahu has announced,
Francisco, whether that policy. Lower,
oh, I forgot.
The quality of your stream, please.
Lower the quality of my stream? Sure. Hold on just a second. Lower the quality of my stream. So that means that the video is getting a little jumpy, huh? Okay, here we go. Okay, so the other thing I wanted to point out before I leave this topic is that, I covered it. I covered it. All right, the next thing is the implications of Netanyahu's policy, right? So he's saying we're going to conquer the city of Gaza, but he's not saying he's going to conquer the Gaza Strip. So he's not saying that he's going to get rid of Hamas, because Hamas is, of course, in order to completely get rid of Hamas, you have to conquer the entire Gaza Strip. You have to get you have to expel them or kill them in all of the Gaza Strip. That's the only way to really conquer Gaza and really defeat Hamas. You have to take the territory. This is what you do in a war, right? But Netanyahu's not saying that. He's saying he's going to take just the city of Gaza. Now, the claim, of course, is that if he takes the city of Gaza, then the war will be over. This is what he's trying to sell. But of course, it won't be over. Because Hamas is getting help from all kinds of places, and they will continue to send that help to keep Hamas alive. So long as there's some piece of Gaza that Israel has not conquered, that's where Hamas will continue to make a stand, and they will continue to hold those hostages and make videos about them. And of course, meanwhile, the prestige of Israel will be further destroyed. More Israeli soldiers will have to die. The pressure on Israel to stop will increase. This is, in my opinion, more of the same. It's a terrible policy. What Israel should do is conquer all of Gaza. Of course, that's what they need to do. And the continual promise that they're going to, you know, defeat Hamas and save the hostages is a lie that amounts to cooperating with the strategy of the terrorists. So you could even call it treason, right? Because this is what the terrorists want. So why is the government of Israel doing what the terrorists want? Why is it following the playbook that the terrorists designed? The terrorists want those hostages to become the wedge that divides the Israelis down the middle. That's what they want. And by proposing that, when you say, I'm going to defeat Hamas and save the hostages, which are irreconcilable claims, irreconcilable goals, right? When you say that, you guarantee the division in Israel. What the government should have done is say, look, we can't save all of the hostages, because that's just the truth. We are not all powerful. We can't save all of the hostages. It's very, very painful, but it's beyond our power. And it is immoral to allow the enemy to use the hostages to kill more and more Jews, which is what they've been doing. Netanyahu should have explained to Israelis that he had learned the lesson from the Gilad Shalit episode, when Hamas took one Israeli soldier and Netanyahu released 1,000 terrorists from Israeli jails to get that one soldier back. And those terrorists then killed in the October 7th massacre, because the released terrorists are the people who organized it. They killed 1,200 Israelis and then took 250 hostages. All right. So the price paid for Gilad Shalit was not releasing 1,000 terrorists from the jail. That's not how you do the math. The price was 1,200 Jews, additional Jews, tortured to death. If Netanyahu had not collaborated with the policy of the terrorists back then, Israel would have lost one soldier, not 1,200 civilians, and then an additional 250 hostages, right? So collaborating with the strategy of the terrorists is treason. It is against the Israeli population to do this. This is what the terrorists want. And what is Netanyahu doing? He's doing the same thing again. He's saying that he's going to defeat Hamas and go save the hostages. You can't do both things. You either collaborate with the strategy of trying to save the hostages, which is what he's doing, which is what all these negotiations, blah, 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 and let some humanitarian aid in, and we will let some hostages out, a little trickle, and you let in more aid in, and so forth. That's what the hostages are for, as in the mind of the terrorists. This is why they took them. And the government of Benjamin Netanyahu has been collaborating with this strategy. No, sir. What they need to do is destroy Hamas and explain to the Israelis, look, we've learned the lesson the hard way. Collaborating with the strategy of the terrorists costs many more lives. Look at the way they've been fighting. They've been fighting house to house instead of just mowing Gaza down, which is what they should have done. And by fighting house to house, many, many more soldiers have died. And you still don't have all the hostages back, right? So this is costing many, many additional lives. It's not the right policy. The right policy is to destroy Hamas, conquer Gaza, take over all of the institutions of Gaza, and then you can provide a semblance of security, not only for the Israeli Jews, but for the Arabs in Gaza as well, because the people that wreck everybody's security is Hamas, right? And that's what tells you that the pressure that Israel is under to not do this, right? Because everybody, in the minute that this policy was announced, I mean, it's a bad policy, but of course, that's not what these various international actors are complaining about. They're complaining that supposedly this is an unacceptable punishment on the population of Gaza, right? So the fact that Israel is going to evacuate them from Gaza and provide all kinds of assistance and build the infrastructure to give it to them and so on and so forth, that doesn't matter, even though no army has ever done that for an enemy population ever, right? But that's still not enough. It's still not enough for the civilian population that voted and for and supports the Hamas genocidal terrorists that murdered innocent Jews in their homes on October 7th. The very Jews that wanted to develop a relationship with the Arabs in Gaza, right? Doesn't matter. It's still not good enough for these deranged Jew killers that Israel is preparing the south of Gaza to give them humanitarian aid. But it's not enough. They have to stop the operation and not conquer Gaza, not conquer Gaza City. Okay? So when you see this, you know that it's anti-Semitism. You know it's anti-Semitism. These foreign leaders are interested only in the destruction of the Jewish state. They are not interested in the civilian population of Gaza. Those are crocodile tears. If they were really interested in the civilian population of Gaza, they would have supported a long time ago that Israel completely destroy Hamas and take over all of the institutions of Gaza. Because we already know what happens when the Arabs of Gaza govern themselves. They vote Hamas in, and they turn all of Gaza into a terrorist infrastructure dedicated to the genocide of the Jewish people. So these people, at least for now, at least for a generation, or maybe two, cannot govern themselves. They can't. They can't. They already demonstrated this. Israel did the experiment. Israel gave them Gaza in the year 2005. But most people still don't understand that. They think Israel has been occupying Gaza. No, sir. In 2005, Israel vacated Gaza. And they even forcibly removed all of the Jews who had gone to live there. They removed them. They didn't want to go. And the experiment was made to see what the Arab Palestinians would do with their self-government in Gaza. And what they did is they voted Hamas in and they turned Gaza into a terrorist proto-state dedicated to the murder of every last living Jew. Therefore, this population cannot live next to the Israelis, not unless the Israelis are in charge of everything. And that would make them second-class citizens. This is true. And that is deserved. Somebody who wants to dedicate his life to the extinction of another people cannot be a first-class citizen. You lose some rights when you are dedicated to murder another people. Of course. If that's your ideology, we can't let you govern yourself. So the only two solutions for Gaza, the only possible solution for Gaza is total conquest by the Israeli Defense Forces. But more than that, the people of Gaza have to be given incentives to leave, right? That's certainly a humanitarian solution. Give them money, give them assistance to go somewhere else because they can't live next to people that they want to exterminate. That's ridiculous. And or if they're going to stay, well, then they're going to have to be governed by the Israelis. The health ministry, the education, the government, all of the services, everything, it has to be run by the Israeli Jews. Even the water department has to be run by the Israeli Jews. Why? Because they the Hamas was grabbing the pipes, the water pipes that the state of Israel had built to deliver water to the Arabs in Gaza. They were taking those pipes and turning them into missiles. So there is no institution that these people won't destroy. So if they're going to stay, for as long as they stay, the Israeli Jews need to run everything. And ideally, they should not stay. People who want to murder another people should not be living beside them. There's no reason why the state of Israel needs to tolerate that, especially now that they've made it so clear with the October 7th attack what their intentions are. So I'm going to leave it at that, unless you tell me, Marcos, that we have some questions from the gallery. If you can see any questions, I'll field them. If not,
yeah, no, we don't have any questions.
Okay, good.
In the comments, yeah.
Good. So we'll leave it there. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next Monday on our next English podcast, and we will be announcing the topic very soon. Talk to you later. Don't forget to subscribe, like, ding the bell, and share. It's important to share because we're trying to reach lots of people, and sharing is the greatest motor that we can use.